To tonight's program. Thanks for dropping by. Hope you're going to stick around for as long as you can stand it. How you doing? Did you have a good weekend? Huh? All ready for Thanksgiving? Did you like Thanksgiving? Or do you find it to be just the beginning of a particular time of year that drives you insane? I've always been aware of the huge difference between what the television, how the television commercials present Thanksgiving and what it's really like. You know what I'm saying? Supermarkets have already started some of these here, probably in your part of the country too. They're called TJs, the tearjerkers. TJ commercials where you watch these things and it reminds you of a past you never had but always wanted, right? Especially if you're in that age group between, 30 and 70, part baby boomer, part not, and where you had certain over the woods and over the rivers and through the woods to grandma's house we go, images of what Christmas was supposed to be like. Let me see a show of hands. How many of you have ever gone over the woods, over the river, through the woods to grandma's house? How many of you can even get to grandma's house? And once you're there, how many people want to go in to grandma's house? How many can get the damn door open? I mean, it's just crazy stuff, right? All designed to make you go buy stuff. And, It's just so weird. I feel like I float above it all. I really do. I enjoy whatever my Thanksgiving consists of. Part of it is because I have totally murdered my nuclear family, my original family. I tried to do what Castaneda said you should do. You have to kill your parents, kill all your brothers and sisters, you know, and get rid of everybody. And then you can start your own life. So, and I guess in that sense, I've accomplished that. Now they were willing, partners in their demise because all of them except one, died. Yeah. All my original family members. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's very tragic. But anyway, it's a weird time. Unless you just divorce yourself from the weirdness and have a good time. You know what I'm saying? The quickest way to do that is don't watch the TV commercials. Don't. They'll make you just feel like there's something wrong with you and your family, which is probably true, but we don't like to talk about that, do we? Having said that, we will not be here Thanksgiving night, of course, nor will we be here on the following day, Friday. So we'll be off Thursday and Friday, Thanksgiving and the day after. And what are we doing those two nights? Are they rebroadcasts? Oh, okay. They're rebroadcasts. So stick around for those if you like. So tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday is it. We'll try to take more calls these three nights since on Wednesday will be our podcast giveaway night. We'll do that on Wednesday instead of Friday because we've had more contributions. Thanks to everybody who makes these donations for free podcast subscriptions. You don't know how kind, we see that as being and real opportunity for people who, for whatever reason, are not subscribers can subscribe. So we'll do that Wednesday night. What else we got in terms of announcements? I guess nothing. John, who lives in London, Ontario, Canada, wrote that Saturday night his local Ontario public broadcast station played Oliver Stone's movie JFK. Remember that one? Brilliant movie as far as I'm concerned, although the establishment in this country immediately tried to rip it to pieces, probably because it was so close to the truth. Anyway, John writes, I was struck by how the rhetoric and slurs against President Kennedy were similar then to the ones being leveled at President Obama now. I pray 46 years have sharpened faculties of those charged with his care, Obama's care. John, who wishes all a peaceful Thanksgiving. Yeah, 46 years came and went yesterday, didn't it? Not too much attention paid. I watched a little network news last night when we came home from, where were we? I have no idea. Just cruising around with Molly. And flipped on some news before we built a fire and made some popcorn. It was colder than hell here in the hills of North Georgia Mountains last night and the night before. And we have a good time. We build a fire in the fireplace, make some popcorn, have a glass of wine. Molly doesn't. She has a glass of tea or something, herbal tea. And then we help her build a fort in front of the fireplace. She gets all cushions off the couches and some of her pillows off her bed upstairs and brings down her stuffed animals. And then she brings a deck of playing cards because she loves to play war. So, the day just kind of got past us, and I watched a little bit of news that night, and no mention that I was aware of the 46, I can't believe it was 46 years ago. People who lived through that will remember, like a previous generation did, exactly where they were. Their day of infamy was December 7th, 1941. My generation's day of infamy was November 22nd, 1963. And there's a generation, I guess, who will look at September 11th, 2001. But the 46th anniversary came and went. Sheila wrote to me about the 46th anniversary, too. And in her email, she wrote, interesting to note, in Russ Baker's book, Family of Secrets, on pages 183 and 184, the following. Nixon's presence in Dallas on November 22, 1963, along with LBJ's and George Herbert Walker Bush's quieter presence on the periphery, created a rather remarkable situation. Three future presidents of the United States were all present in a single American city on the day when their predecessor was assassinated there. And within days, a fourth eventual successor, Gerald Ford, would be asked by LBJ to join the Warren Commission investigating the event. End quote. And we know how that turned out, don't we? Sheila writes. Ford's asinine single bullet whizzing up and down and around theory. I didn't know, because I guess I should have known, I didn't know that Nixon. And I'd heard that Herbert Walker Bush was there. Man. Bob Alexander sent me an email today to remind me about a nomination of President Obama. This comes from CredoAction.com. Obama just nominated Islam Siddiqui, a top official from a company called Crop. Not a company, but an organization called Crop Life. That's the pesticide industry's powerful trade group. Obama nominated Siddiqui to be America's chief agricultural negotiator for international trade. If confirmed by the Senate, Siddiqui, who has spent the last several years of his career fighting restrictions and bans on environmentally hazardous pesticides, would bring that inappropriately aggressive stance on broadening pesticide use to the White House and then to influence trade negotiations with Europe and the developing world. So, you know, once again, Obama does it again, and you got to wonder, what is the man thinking? A little bit more on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stick with us.
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Past the hour. Bridget writes in about the Discovery Channel ran a Who Killed JFK piece last night based on the book Tom Hartman co-authored, which suggested it was a mob hit. It was interesting. Yeah, we started to watch a bit of that, I think. I think I started to watch a little bit of that last night on the Discovery Channel. I didn't know Hartman was a co-author of that. Well, that's interesting. Back to the Barack Obama nominating this guy Siddiqui, a top official from a pesticide industry trade group. Obama has nominated him, and I guess that means he needs Senate confirmation to be the chief agricultural negotiator for international trade. Now that's scary. I mean, for Christ's sake, there was nobody else to be the chief agriculture. How about somebody who is really, truly, honestly practicing, and profitably so? By profitably, I don't necessarily mean making money at it. I mean preserving the ground on which they're doing this and, practicing sustainable farming. You know, an organic farming co-op someplace, a big one. They do exist. How about somebody who organized that? Why someone from the pesticide industry? Huh? Anyway, this guy's been nominated to be the chief agricultural negotiator for international trade. And if he's confirmed by the Senate, that means The stance on broadening pesticide use would now become the official stance of the government of the United States. CredoAction.com goes on and says President Obama's restrictions on lobbyists in government would definitely be undermined by Siddiqui, even though he is not technically a current registered lobbyist. However, Siddiqui's record at CropLife shows why he should not be the chief agriculture negotiator. He labored to minimize restrictions on pesticides in NAFTA. He advocated for pesticides as a treatment for bee colony collapse disorder, despite the fact that pesticides have been implicated as a leading cause of bee deaths. And worst of all, during Siddiqui's tenure, CropLife succeeded in exempting U.S. farmers from a worldwide ban on the antifungal methyl bromide, a potent ozone depleter. So he gets appointed by the great progressive Democrat president, Barack Obama. And then this, Siddiqui's defenders in the White House point to his work implementing the original organic label at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in 1998 as an indication of his so-called commitment to sustainable agriculture. However, under Siddiqui, the USDA attempted to weaken, some have argued to kill, the original organic standards by overriding guidelines proposed by the Organic Advisory Board. The USDA organic label as proposed by Siddiqui's office would have allowed the use of sewage sludge, irradiation, genetically modified organisms, and even some synthetic pesticides. Thankfully, a public outcry convinced the USDA to reverse the decision. And then this little tag at the end. We need to stop Siddiqui again. Ask President Obama to drop the nomination of Islam Siddiqui as chief agriculture negotiator in the Office of the United States Trade Representative. Okay, yeah, I'll do that first thing in the morning. No, I won't, because the decision's already been made, and we understand that. And I'll be ding, dang, damned if I'm going to waste one email. That is so far beyond the scope of people preventing it from happening. And regardless of what they say, you know, we need to stop Siddiqui again. Well, they didn't stop Siddiqui in the first place. They stopped what'd they stop? I don't know what. I don't care. Being able to list food grown in toilet sludge as being organic. Well, I guess it is organic, isn't it? It's madness. It's absolute madness. But why? You know, you got to ask yourself, why would Barack Obama do that? Why would he do that? And the answer is to us thumb-sucking, hair-twisting, bedwetting liberals, the answer is, why not?
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
My bad. It wasn't Ford's single Bullet Theory. It was Arlen Specter's. Thanks everybody who corrected that. Something very, very weird that came up is on our menu for tonight's program. And right before we go in the air, I usually watch as much of Keith Olbermann's show as I can, usually the last half hour. And he had this very same item. And this happens so much. we'll pick stories that we're going to get into, and Olbermann does it before we get to it. And sometimes Rachel will do it subsequent to Olbermann. You know, we're kind of sandwiched in between, although, you know, I have 1/10 millionth the audience that Olbermann and Rachel Maddow have, and we don't have television. So we're at that disadvantage. But we still have the story, and I want to share it with you. And it was from the New York Times blog page. Adam Nagorny is writing about how the Republican National Committee is going to be holding its winter meeting this January in Honolulu. Now, that's not the story. The story is Republican leaders are circulating prior to that meeting a resolution. And this is very reminiscent of Newt Gingrich's Contract on America. But the Republican leaders are circulating a resolution listing 10 positions that Republican candidates must support in order to demonstrate that they really do espouse conservative principles and public policies, is how they put it, that are in opposition to Obama's socialist agenda. Now, according to this resolution, any Republican candidate who broke with the party or breaks future with the party on three or more of these issues, in votes cast, public statements made, or answering a questionnaire, would be penalized by being denied party funds or the party endorsement. Okay? This is just like the Soviet, the Stalinist purges, political purges. The Republican Party has truly become Stalinist. We can use the Nazi analogy as often as we want, but the Republican Party has become Stalinist in its internal operations. And the head of the Stalinist Republican Party's KGB is, of course, Glenn Beck. So they've got 10 requirements to get support from the Republican Party. If you break three or more, you're out. And they're calling on, well, the resolution invokes the sainted Ronald Reagan and notes that Reagan had said that the Republican Party should be devoted to conservative principles, but also open to diverse views. President Reagan believed, this resolution says, quote, that someone who agreed with him 8 out of 10 times was his friend, not his opponent. Hence, 7 out of 10, and you're out. You see how this works? The resolution demands that Republicans support smaller government and national deficits and lower tax, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to read the list for you. And the odd part is Ronald Reagan himself would have been denied funds by the Republican Party. This is how hypocritical these sons of bitches are and how stupid they are, and really how stupid they realize rank and file Republicans are. Because by this list, Ronald Reagan would have been denied Republican Party support. Here's the list. One, we support smaller government, smaller national debt, lower deficits, and lower taxes by opposing bills like Obama's stimulus bill. Well, Ronald Reagan left office with the biggest national debt in history and the biggest deficit up to that point in history. So you're out, Ronnie. Number two, we support market-based health care reform and oppose Obama-style government-run health care. Would that it were government-run health care, which it is not. But that's what these dumb sons of bitches in the Republican Party want their dumber sons of bitches in the rank and file to believe. Number three, we support market-based energy reforms by opposing cap-and-trade legislation. No, that makes sense. That's all choked to death. Four, we support workers' right to a secret ballot by opposing card check. Well, Ronald Reagan did not support workers' rights to do anything. One of his first actions when he came into office was to fire the Professional Air Traffic Controller Organization because of their threat to strike because of the situation under which they were being forced to work. That's two. We support legal immigration and assimilation into American society by opposing amnesty for illegal immigrants. Ronald Reagan sponsored amnesty bills. He was in favor of amnesty for illegal. He didn't sponsor it. He was president. But he was very much he advocated amnesty for illegal immigrants. As a matter of fact, wasn't that passed? That's three. We support victory in Iraq and Afghanistan by supporting military recommended troop surges. Reagan ignored his military recommended troop surges regarding Lebanon. That's four, Ronnie. Goodbye. We support containment of Iran and North Korea, particularly effective action to eliminate their nuclear weapons threat. Ah, but Ronald Reagan sold weapons to Iran. Oh, no. How many is that? No, that's four. Goodbye, Ronnie. We support contain number seven. No, that is that's number five. Reagan left office with the biggest deficit in history. Reagan did not support workers' rights through secret ballot. Reagan advocated amnesty for illegal immigrants. Reagan ignored his military commanders regarding Lebanon. Reagan sold weapons to Iran. So right now he's batting 5 out of 5. He says, we support retention of the Defense of Marriage Act. That's number 8. Reagan had the first gay sleepover at the White House. So that's kind of iffy. We'll leave that one in the iffy column. Number 9, we support protecting the lives of vulnerable persons by opposing health care rationing and denial of health care and government funding of abortion. Number 10, we support the right to keep and bear arms by opposing government restrictions on gun ownership. But Reagan signed the Brady gun control bill after he and his press secretary were gunned down. Where do we stand now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. My goodness. Ronnie Reagan only comes up with a 40% rating. The Republicans say anyone with 70% is out. So by their own definition, by their own requirements, Ronald Reagan would not have qualified for Republican Party support. So I'll tell you what, you hypocritical, snot-nosed, bastard Republicans, tell you what, why don't you just forget Ronald Reagan? Do something about, Richard Nixon or Sarah Palin or who also flaunts the rules like there were no rules. Why not dedicate your dumbass little list of 10 points that must be followed lest the non-follower not get any support from your corrupt party? Get away from Reagan. As much as I did not like Reagan, I'll tell you something. Reagan, in his worst time, even when he was trading weapons for money to wage an illegal war in Central America, trading weapons to the Iranians, he was he had more on the ball than any of you dumbass Republicans who now control the party. Okay? And I say that knowing he was in the initial stages of Alzheimer's. I say that knowing that he was a bircher of the highest order, a right-wing freak, although he was certainly a very handsome man and a good actor, wasn't he? He had a great smile. Oh, my God. When Reagan smiled, the birds sang and the sun shined. Didn't it? Or is it the sun shone? So, you know, this happens so often where Oberman somehow figures out what we're going to talk about and he beats me to it. Yeah, in your dreams, Malloy. But I just found that very interesting that Ronald Reagan would have had a 40%, whereas Republicans are demanding a 70% where it concerns party purity. Or I'm sorry, they're demanding 80% because if you hit 70, you're gone. So the Republicans demand 80% purity in their little list of 10 bullet points, and all Reagan can come up with is half that. So again, why don't you cowardly, hypocritical, lying Republican bastards forget about Ronald Reagan? As weird as he is, or was, he wasn't one of you. He just wasn't. And I think that's the point. He wasn't that effed up, if you know what I mean. We'll be back in a minute.
radio right. From the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Mal, elaborate a little bit on the rebuttals to these 10, sent me an email here on these 10, resolutions list from the Republican Party, where the Republicans say we support smaller government, smaller national debt, lower deficits, blah, blah, blah. Mal writes, gee, haven't the Republican administration over the past 30 years actually increased the national debt, increased the deficits, even created them when they weren't there, and often increased taxes? The answer is yes. Number two, we support market-based health care reform and oppose Obama-style government-run health care. Okay. Because A, the market has done such a good job of reforming itself so far, or B, what Obama-style government-run healthcare are they talking about? First of all, the government runs current healthcare programs well. You know, Medicare, the VA. Secondly, none of the bills currently before Congress run healthcare. Just a limited government health insurance program. Number three in the resolution, we support market-based energy reforms by opposing cap-and-trade legislation. A cap-and-trade program is a market-based reform program. Number four, we support workers' rights to secret ballot by opposing card check. Mal writes, the card check program is just stating that the workers want a vote. The actual vote to have a union is a secret ballot vote. The card check is no different than registering to vote. Number six on their tacky little list. Number six is we support victory in Iran and Afghanistan by supporting military recommended troop surges. Didn't George Bush, just now removed from office last year, didn't he fire any general who recommended something he didn't like? Of course he did. General George Casey. The list is fairly long. Number seven, we support containment of Iran and North Korea, particularly effective action to eliminate their nuclear weapons threat. And as Mal writes, Iran doesn't currently have a nuclear weapon. And Korea was contained until Bush tried to get tough and macho with them. Number eight, we support retention of the Defense of Marriage Act. Mal writes, eyes roll. Number nine, we support protecting the vulnerable persons by opposing health care rationing and denial of health care and government funding of abortion. And as Mal writes, yeah, the Republicans have such a good record of protecting the lives of vulnerable persons, like those cut off of medical care by health insurance companies and those denied health care because of pre-existing conditions. Note that in some cases, denying the government funding of abortion actually puts the lives of both the mother and the potential child at risk. Number 10, we support the right to keep and bear arms by opposing government restrictions on gun ownership. That's in the list. And as Mal writes, 50 caliber machine guns for everyone. Put that 25-millimeter chain gun on the roof of your SUV. The Road Warrior was a model of what to strive for in society. Well, Mal makes some better points than I make in that the Republican hypocrisy here. My points were that Ronald Reagan himself would not have qualified for Republican support, financial or in terms of having prominent Republicans come and lobby for him. But, you know, Mal, is that Malachi? I think it is absolutely correct. See, the hypocrisy in this list that the Republicans are now going to tout, their 10 requirements for a support for any Republican Party, is just insane. This resolution is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Unless they want to deny the past 30, 40 year history up to the present moment of the Republican Party as if it didn't exist. But they know who their audience is. Their audience does not consist of potential candidates running on the Republican ticket anywhere in the country. Their audience consists of the worse than dumbass rank and file Republicans out here who will get their hands on this because this is going to go out in a mailing, a fundraising mailing, you watch. And the dumbass rank and file Republicans will get this and go, yeah, this is good. Yeah, I really like this. Yeah, thank God for Republicans. Yeah, Obama-run health care is awful. You know, and this is what they'll do. Not realizing that they're just babbling like gibbering monkeys in a tree. It's just mind-boggling. But the Republicans know, the Republican office holders know their market. They know who they're talking to. Capital D, dumb. Capital A, asses. Dumbasses! And since that's who they're talking to, well, 1 + 1 = 2. We're going to have a report from Prairie 2 coming up after the break here, but he did send me a little email about this appointment of Siddiqui to be our chief trade negotiator where it concerns chemical stuff on agriculture. Well, the chief agriculture representative on trade negotiations, blah, blah, blah. But Prairie 2 writes, at least Obama is consistent. His secretary of agriculture was a politician and former Philadelphia lawyer whose only experience with agriculture was taking millions in campaign contributions from predatory multinational agribusiness giants. It's just kind of heartbreaking, isn't it? And for those of you who insisted that Hillary Clinton would have been different, let me tell you something. Hillary Clinton would have been even worse. Trust me. No. She would have been even worse. Take a look at her record. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Something up here real quick regarding the single bullet theory. Okay, I realize that Arlen Specter may have mouthed that or put forward that that nonsense, but this is from Associated Press. This was written sometime in the 90s. It says 33 years ago, Gerald R. Ford took pen in hand and changed ever so slightly the Warren Commission's key sentence on the place where a bullet entered John F. Kennedy's body when he was killed in Dallas. The effect of Ford's change was to strengthen the commission's conclusion that a single bullet passed through Kennedy and severely wounded Texas Governor John Connally, a crucial element in its finding that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole gunman. A small change, said Gerald Ford on Wednesday when it came to light, one intended to clarify meaning, not alter history. Now, this is back when Ford was still alive. Quote, my changes had nothing to do with the conspiracy theory, he said in a telephone interview from Beaver Creek, Colorado. My changes were only an attempt to be more precise. End quote. However, the editing was seized upon by members of the so-called conspiracy community, which rejects the commission's conclusion that Oswald acted alone. Of course, I'm in that for damn sure. Robert Morningstar, computer systems specialist in New York City, who said he has studied the assassination since it occurred and written an internet book about it, said, quote, "This is the most significant lie in the whole Warren Commission report." The effect of Ford's editing, Morningstar said, was to suggest that a bullet struck Kennedy in the neck, raising the wound 2 or 3 inches. Without that alteration, they never could have hoodwinked the public as to the true number of assassins. And it goes on and on and on. This is written before, I guess it wasn't written in the mid-90s, but some time ago. It was the mid-90s. So, it wasn't that Gerald Ford put forth the single bullet theory. It was that Gerald Ford solidified the single bullet theory by editing ever so slightly, in his words, the final conclusion of the Warren Commission report. And as you know, there was another commission in the 80s, a Senate commission that said pretty much the chances were that it was a conspiracy, that there was more than one shooter. But this is something that if you're alive today, I don't care if you're 9 years old, if you're alive today, you will never know the truth, period. So, all right. Do we have time for Prairie 2 here? I think we do. All right, let's give it a shot. Prairie 2 writes, the stock market was up again today, supposedly because home sales were up 10% in October. But a third of those sales were first-time buyers getting government subsidies. Since buyers and sellers were all expecting the program to end, it's likely just a temporary spike. The real reason the markets are up, of course, is the cheap dollar policy. The Federal Reserve, is basically giving money to the big banks at a loss. And they have so much money that they are simply driving the market like a flock of sheep. Germany is warning the United States against creating market bubbles, echoing China's fears. Germany is, despite paying union wages and benefits to everybody, Germany is the world's largest exporter of manufactured goods with twice the volume of China. They don't like the game of chicken that Obama is playing with China. Since March, the euro has jumped more than 18% against the dollar. At the same time, risky assets have skyrocketed. The S&P 500 is up more than 60%, and a barrel of oil up 125% to around $76, and has been higher. Long-term oil futures have been around $100 a barrel. Gasoline has been trending down, however, as the economy is collapsing faster than refineries can shut down. And the collapsing dollar is driving gold to a new high every day. Things have gotten so spooky, Prairie 2 writes, in the financial markets that interest rates for short-term U.S. Treasury bills turned negative, meaning that investors were buying securities at a loss. This has been good news for the government with interest so low. They're currently spending only $200 billion per year on interest on the $12 trillion in debt. The bad news is they have only been able to do that by putting most of the debt on 30-day notes. A spike in interest rates could easily drive that to $1 trillion. And if nobody wants to buy the government's debt, we could be on the hook for paying out trillions to redeem notes overnight. Well, I digress. Prairie 2 knows, of course, that'll never happen because it's impossible, just impossible. Back to what he writes. Negative interest rates can foretell deflation, or it can just be the banks stockpiling safe securities on their year-end balance sheets. The problem is that everything is so poorly balanced on top of a house of built on worn-out playing cards that was left behind by the Republicans that simple, prudent behavior can trigger a panic. The National Retail Federation forecasts a 1% drop in holiday sales. This has to be a first, as this industry group is always irrationally exuberant. Expect the drop to be much worse, as shoppers are much more prudent this year on top of all the people who have no money and no jobs. The prudent purchase? Canned goods would help boost retail sales. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. All right, we're going to open the lines here since we're only going to be on the air tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. If you want to jump in and join us on a real-time basis, please do. The number here is 877-996-2556. How about Saturday's health insurance vote in the Senate? Kathy blogged about it today. If you want to know her take on it, go to MikeMalloy.com. And read Kathy's blog. She relates it, of course, to, well, the holiday season and A Christmas Carol, Dickens, Thanksgiving, all of it. But when I heard the vote, 60 in favor of what? You know, I was thinking, what? All right, they got 60 in favor of what? In favor of what? Because I wasn't paying attention. You know, what's his vote for? They got 60 votes? Oh, my God. How did they get Lieberman? How did they get Blanche Lincoln? How did they get Mary Landrieu? How did they get Ben Nelson? What the hell is going on here? 60 votes? 60? And then I realized the vote was just a procedural vote so that they could begin the discussion. And all the talk was a discussion about beginning the discussion. I mean, is this the way you run a country? No, this is the way you run an asylum. It is very almost required to kick the asses of the legislative branch of government. Oh, they're all the same. Oh, God, I hate the Democrats and the Republicans. I hate the House and the Senate. Okay. That's fine. But that happens to be the branch of government where, according to the Constitution, all the big decisions are made in either or both of those houses of government. The big decisions, the ones that determine how the American people are going to live their lives. So if it is chock-a-block with morons and idiots and fools and knaves, shouldn't we somehow clean them out? But no, of course not. So the big vote, the big deal, the big action on Capitol Hill on Saturday was a vote to determine whether or not the Senate should talk about things. Oh, my God.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. You know, another story that caught my attention, we'll get to your phone calls in just a second here, over the weekend was that Roman Catholic bishop in Rhode Island, Thomas Tobin, has banned Representative Patrick Kennedy, Ted Kennedy's son, from receiving communion, which is, you know, the without that sacrament, that's the central sacrament of the Catholic Church, because of Kennedy's support for what translates into abortion rights. They're really rights to privacy, but it translates into abortion rights. Kennedy said in a article reported on the Providence Journal's website that, quote, the bishop instructed me not to take communion and said that he has instructed the diocesan priests not to give me communion, end quote, Kennedy told the paper in this interview conducted Friday. Kennedy said the bishop had explained the penalty by telling him, quote, that I'm not a good practicing Catholic because of the positions that I've taken as a public official, end quote, particularly on abortion. Kennedy declined to say when or how Bishop Tobin told him not to take the sacrament, and he declined to say whether he has obeyed the bishop's injunction. Well, I think all religion is just an exercise in delusion and madness anyway. But what really gets me about this, has this bishop instructed the priests in the various dioceses in Rhode Island to not offer communion to any other member of Congress from that state that might happen to support the death penalty? Now, the Catholic Church is on the record as being against the death penalty. So, will somebody help me here? Which Catholic bishop in the United States, and I'll take any of them, just one. How many bishops are there in the United States? How many Catholic bishops? A lot. How many of those bishops have said to any governor or member of Congress or any member of any state legislative body who supports the death penalty, the church shall no longer present or offer the sacrament of communion because the death penalty is in direct opposition to the position of the Catholic Church. Now, anybody? Anybody want to tell me when that's ever happened? Or, that's one. How about this for two? Since the church does not support war except in extremis, and I don't even know what their vision of or version of in extremis is where it concerns war. I guess the church has come up with something called a just war, which would be if this country were attacked in the way that we attacked Iraq. But since we attacked Iraq in direct violation of the church, why has the Catholic Church not made a statement saying that any member of Congress who supported funding of this continuing slaughter of God's children shall be denied communion? Why is that? Does it to you, like it does to me, stink of hypocrisy? And I remember in the Bible that reading the Bible when I was a kid, when I was a youngster growing up, that my grandmother in the Baptist church taught me that if Jesus were capable of hating, the hatred would be directed towards the hypocrites. That was one of the reasons for driving the money changers out of the temple. But this blatant, obscene hypocrisy of this bishop denying Patrick Kennedy something that Patrick Kennedy feels he needs in order to immortalize his soul, to me is an act of viciousness on the part of this priest that almost transcends my understanding. Because the bishop is not ordering no communion to people who support the death penalty. Why is he ordering no communion to people who support a woman's right to privacy? Nobody supports abortion. Nobody. Unless they are crazy. Nobody supports abortion. The Supreme Court did not support abortion. Roe v. Wade is not about abortion. It's about privacy. A woman's right to privacy. So this story about Kennedy, Patrick Kennedy, and this crazy-ass Catholic bishop in Rhode Island, Thomas Tobin, is a real stomach-turner, the whole story. You know, would that Patrick Kennedy could understand that he doesn't need to believe in this superstitious nonsense, but short of that, the hypocrisy of this representative of the Catholic religion is almost gagging. No, it is gagging. We'll be back with your phone call. Stay with us. Can't
depend on the sacrament. No Father, no Holy Ghost. You can't depend on any churches unless there's real estate that you want to buy. You can't depend on a lot of things. You need a busload of faith to get by. What? Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
It is 25 before the hour, so let's do some phone calls. Jose is in Fayetteville, Georgia. Jose, welcome to the program. Hi.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? I'm an original truth seeker.
Oh, yeah?
That's right.
Well, glad to hear it.
the old WSB days.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, me and you.
Oh, this Jose.
That Jose.
The Jose who provided money was an investor one time when I had to buy time on WQXI here in Atlanta.
Well, money well spent, too, I might say.
Man, if it hadn't been for you and three, four other people, I wouldn't have lasted the 4 months that I lasted. How you doing, Jose?
You're too kind to say that.
Well, it's the truth. So the audience knows when I got fired the second time from WSB, there was nowhere to go to work. And one of the stations here said, well, you can buy time. So I had to go out and find some investors. And Jose was a sales manager at a car dealership in South Metro Atlanta and a Republican.
That way they know that you're an equal opportunity.
Well, I don't know that you were a Republican, but you were damn sure a conservative.
And even more now.
And even more now. But Jose came up with some money and did several people from Republican persuasion and the Democrat persuasion. And we managed to get on the air and stay there for 3 months. You know, that's how I met my wife, Kathy.
I did not know that, but, you know, if you'll put me on hold when we're done, I'd like to call you off the air and meet Kathy and you.
Send me an email. You know, just send me an email, mike@mikemalloy.com.
Okay, I'll do that. Now, listen, my old and loved friend.
Right.
Tell me anything you like about... You see, I don't say I'm a Republican anymore because we not.
Yeah, they got too liberal for you, right?
Exactly. No, they became Democrats.
Yeah, they all became Democrats. Yeah, they all became Democrats. All right, Jose, go ahead.
The Democrats became socialists and Republicans became Democrats. I'm a conservative.
You're a conservative, all right.
I'm a conservative. And had Sarah been at the top of my ticket, we would have won.
Oh, my God. Oh, you're not saying this to me. We need to have lunch so I can straighten your ass out a little bit, but go ahead.
Well, all I'm saying, Mike, and I wish you'd tell me one thing that you like about us conservatives. One thing.
Comic relief?
Outside that, we get that from Saturday Night Live and all your...
One thing I like about conservatives. Well, there are a lot of things I like about real conservatives.
Okay, I'm a real conservative.
Well, now wait. Real conservatives, the first thing real conservatives would have done would have been gotten to work to stop the pollution of the planet from the burning of fossil fuels, but y'all don't do that. The next thing you would have done, if you were a real conservative, would be to stop these wars of opportunity that are killing American soldiers, killing foreign civilians, destroying our economy, breaking the country into two or three pieces with all this rivalry or all this dissent. That's what, you know, conservatives, Jose, you know this, the root of the word conservative is conserve. And I don't know what y'all are conserving. You're not conserving anything.
Well, Well, I'm trying to conserve this country.
Well, not by supporting wars of opportunity, not supporting some crazy woman like Sarah Palin, who, come on, she couldn't find her ass with both hands, and you know it. This woman, yeah. This woman is.
I've been fined it for.
There you go. This is what I said the other night. The only reason you conservatives like her is because she's hot.
Okay, well, listen, hey, she is hot.
See, there you go. All right, Jose, go. You're making my case.
She's hot and she's smart.
Smart?
She's smart. All right, please, tell me one time, Mike, and you know I love you, so this is a conservative telling you.
Yeah.
I love you. But tell me how you think that this president is smart. Please.
Well, he is smart. I'm not saying I have not said. Matter of fact, I have said repeatedly that he's not doing the things that a Democratic president, by definition of Democratic Party principles, should be doing. I'm not happy with Obama, but I will guarantee to you he's not a socialist. I will guarantee to you he's not the other extreme, a Nazi. What Barack Obama is.
I never said Nazi.
I know, but a lot of people on your side of the political abyss do say it. But you know what Obama is? He is the same as Bill Clinton. He is.
No, listen.
He's Republican light, Jose.
I never would have thought that I would have said that if only we had Hillary in there.
Now, Hillary?
Trust me. Yeah, if only we had Hillary instead of him. I never would have thought that.
Well, you're right. You're right in that Hillary Clinton is a conservative. You're absolutely right.
Right. I never would have thought that I would have voted for John McCain. Now, let me tell you something. I didn't vote for him. I voted against Obama.
Well, I know a lot of you people did.
Yeah, I voted against Obama.
Why?
Oh, because he's a fraud.
Well, what made him a fraud during the campaign?
Listen, no. One thing, he's not a fraud as a campaigner. That was a brilliant campaign. Brilliant. But look who he was running against. And how many, 64 million votes for McCain, 55 million?
No. It was, I think you got it just backwards. I think the vote totals, McCain got over 50 million, but.
Right. I'm just saying, so 50 million. I know that Obama won. And
right.
He had, you know, but what I'm saying is, I never would have voted for McCain. I never would have voted for McCain. He was as far from me as it came.
Yeah, he's too liberal for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
But his running mate had a hot ass, right?
Oh, hey, listen. I'm waiting for the book signing down here, okay?
All right, Jose, listen. I got to go, man. Send me an email. We'll get together.
Mike@MikeMalloy.com.
Mike@MikeMalloy.com. That's it.
You're going to get it tonight, babe.
All right, Jose.
All right, see you.
Thanks for checking in. Oh God! Yeah, that's the only conservative, and you heard him. He didn't vote for McCain because McCain's too liberal. You heard him. I you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago when I knew Jose, yeah, he used to listen to my program all the time. Didn't like it. Didn't like my point of view, but he listened. Now he's the kind of conservative. I can talk with Jose. I can have lunch with him. I can I used to go to where he worked. And sit around and BS about all this political mess. And when I needed to get back on the air or to get on the air, I had a couple of hardcore conservatives here in the Atlanta area who came with the money, and a couple of hardcore liberals too who came with the money. But it ran out. And the real liberal organizations here in Metro Georgia, like the labor unions and the various groups that you know had some money. I wasn't asking for a salary. I was just asking for enough money to pay for the airtime on this radio station. And the liberal groups just turned their back on me. Absolutely walked away. So it lasted 3-4 months and then bang, collapsed. Jose, huh? Wow. Tom is in Del Monte, California. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hi. I thought that was a very interesting conversation with you and Jose.
Jose, yeah, he has a very strong belief system.
Yeah,
Yeah, it scares me.
He's all wrong. He's completely wrong, but that's all right.
Yeah, but I'm kind of I need to ask your advice on. I'm going to China next week, and I need your should I bow or what?
No, not in China. That's in Japan. In China, you just just shake hands.
Oh, okay. The deal is they've got where I'm going, they're going to have 3 or 4 feet of snow and up in the Hunan province up there. And
yeah.
And I'm kind of concerned with all this crap about Obama sucking butt to China. I mean, what's your take on that?
Trade
agreements and what he's trying to do with he came out with we're going to work together ecologically.
Well, I don't know. The people who are a lot smarter than I am said that first of all, they couldn't understand the reason for the trip to begin with, and secondly, couldn't understand. Couldn't understand what the point was. Secondly, if there was a point, okay, what were the results of the trip? And apparently there were no results. I almost think that Obama went there because China, the Chinese government, it would cost them if they did this, but it wouldn't cost that much. They could tilt this country into chaos, absolutely into chaos. They own the United States right now. They own all the government paper, all the dollars. Well, not all of it, but enough that they could send this country. We're in economic chaos now, thanks to 8 years of Republican rule and 8 years of Clinton's craziness with NAFTA. We're right on the verge of utter and absolute collapse. The Chinese, all they have to do is pull one card out of that house of cards, and it all comes collapsing. I mean, if you listen to this program regularly, you know what Prairie 2 says. So I think he went there just to say, hey, guys, please don't kill us.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to join in. Dan is in San Francisco listening to Sirius. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for your program. I was over in Oakland today at a press conference for Barbara Lee. She was introducing her resolution H.R. 3699 to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. Beginning with barring the sending of any further troops. And if you'll remember, Barbara Lee was the only person in Congress to vote against the original Afghanistan resolution of 2001, giving George Bush carte blanche to attack anyone, anywhere.
Was she the only one?
Yep, she's the only one. The only one in Congress.
Well, you got to respect her.
Really? And so I was hoping your listeners could call their representatives and urge them to co-sponsor this H.R. 3699.
Did she happen to indicate what she thought the chances of such a bill even coming up for debate were, realistically speaking?
She was pretty optimistic about it, of course, but I think she's got 35 or more sponsors now.
Really, that many? I guess that would be the liberal caucus, what's left of it.
Yeah.
And probably some of the congressional black caucus.
Yeah.
When does it get introduced, this bill?
Well, apparently it's already been introduced, or she introduced it today. She was in Oakland today.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was the kickoff. I'm not too clear about that. It's listed online, so I think it's already been introduced.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the only thing on the board that calls for a withdrawal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish that there were some way to bring a proposed bill like that up for debate in the House. I'm not talking about the House Armed Services Committee or that. I mean, for a full debate in the House.
Yeah.
And in order for that to happen, I don't know how the House rules work. In the Senate, there has to be a filibuster-proof majority, which is what happened this over this weekend with the health insurance reform bill. I don't know what the rules are in the House about getting something to the floor for debate. But, you know, as cynical as it is for me to say this, it's also true that the chances of that coming to the floor for the debate in the full House is practically zero. It doesn't make any difference. You know, there could be 100 sponsors. And I hate to say that because I don't want to be one of those people who pees on everybody's parade who's trying to do something to stop this craziness in Afghanistan. But on the other hand, when you have, as a matter of fact, what you said earlier, that she was the only one who resisted the congressional authorization, such as it was, for George Bush to make a decision regarding Iraq. A lot of these people say, well, we didn't vote to send troops. We voted to give Bush the authority to do that if he felt it necessary, which to me is weasel words. Those are weasel words. I'd much rather go back to the constitutional idea of the Congress declares war, not the executive branch. Well, good luck to Barbara Lee, but what do you think's going to happen?
Well, I don't know, but this is certainly something that everybody can do across the country, is get on the phone and call their own reps to support it.
That's true, yeah.
What's the cutoff point? 200? Sponsors? I mean, would that do it?
I don't know anymore. I don't know how many members of the House or the Senate, well, in this case, the House, would even consider voting to cut off funds because they would withdrawal resolution, because immediately the right wing scream machine in this country that runs 24/7 without let up on radio and television would immediately label these members of Congress as traitors, deserting the troops. They hate our soldiers. They hate our soldiers' little children who are at home. You know how it goes. You know what these bastards do, and you know how effective they are at doing it. I can see Hannity and Beck and Palin and Bachman, and the pig man and all these people just shrieking and screaming. And because the vast majority of the people in this country are so abysmally ignorant and willfully ignorant, they would be convinced. So the members of Congress, remember, with a few exceptions, and I hope I'm right on this, maybe there's no exceptions, with few exceptions, the first duty of a member of the House or the Senate is to remain a member of the House or the Senate. It's not to serve their constituents. I hope I'm wrong on that. I would like to think that there are a couple. Barbara Lee, obviously, I guess, is one. I think Dennis Kucinich is one. There are a handful of members of Congress and even a handful of senators who are there to serve the people. But
if these representatives were backed up by American people calling them.
Well, that's true. That's true. So you want people to call their members of the House and support Barbara Lee's bill to end our military involvement in Afghanistan.
Correct. And that's H.R. 3699.
3699. House Resolution 3699.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, Dan. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. And God, I hate to sound like such a cynical bastard. I really do. I really do. You know, I think about the Gulf Tonkin resolution way back in, what, 64, 65? How many people voted no? I know Wayne Morse, and I think there was one more. Gruning of Alaska, is that right? Did I just pull that fact out of my Wayback Machine, or have I got it wrong? I know it was Wayne Morse. Wasn't he? Was he a Republican? I don't remember. Because all I know that that resolution meant that my ass was going off to fight the Vietnamese. We'll be back after the top of the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Kick the hour off to remind you the sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle, or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. Before we go back to your calls here, in one of the papers, I'm not sure which one, but it reports the top executives of four companies that blew their employee pension plans down the drain. Four companies where they cut their employees loose from pension plans. The top executives at those companies received almost $50 million in retirement and severance benefits in the years right before the companies filed for bankruptcy, while the retirees saw their benefits cut by as much as two-thirds. Sons of bitches. And, you know, you hear me rail against capitalism a lot on this program because I'm really getting sick, just sick to my stomach at the way these monsters treat the working people in this country, the middle class. $50 million in bonuses. The Government Accountability Office reports that pensions at the companies United Airlines, U.S. Airways, Polaroid, and Reliance Insurance. The pensions were underfunded by more than $11 billion when the companies turned them over to a government-backed insurance fund. Yeah, let us pay for it. The report says executives at those four companies and six others that abandoned their pension plans took in a total of $350 million in pay and perks in the years leading up to the bankruptcies. So four of them raked in $50 million. 10 of them total raked in $350 million. I you know, the pension system is getting deeper into trouble, if it exists at all, while the executives whose stewardship was supposed to guarantee those pension systems are getting richer. Son of a bitch. You know, I've said before, I wish somebody would show me clearly and unambiguously how capitalism, the ultimate goal of capitalism, is to benefit workers in any way. And no one has been able to accept that challenge, at least to call this program and say, well, here's how, Malloy, because it doesn't work that way. The chairman of the House Education Labor Committee, George Miller, Democrat of California, requested the report as part of an examination of the financial chaos that's now facing the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. That's the federal pension plan insurer. You know, like the FDIC covers banks' deposits. doesn't cover you. When the FDIC guarantees your deposit up to $250,000, whatever it is, they're not guaranteeing you a damn thing. They're guaranteeing the bank. I hope you understand that. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation insurance pension plans covering 44 million people. And it warned earlier this month that it has a deficit of nearly $22 billion. Do you understand that? A deficit. Red ink, even there. Red ink every place. Isn't it amazing what the Bush crime family did to this country in 8 short years? It's just astonishing. The GAO, Government Accountability Office, examined compensation for executives at 10 of the largest companies that turned their pensions over to the government in the past decade. At United Airlines, for example, the CEO there, Glenn Tilton, and two other executives got $7.6 million in retirement benefits from 2002 through 2006 during the time that the airline shed 4 pension plans covering 122,000 workers. Oh, my God. A retired United pilot, for example, told the GAO that he gets a third of the pension he had expected. A third. It just goes on and on. And I think one of the reasons that the crazy people in this country being led by Palin and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these half-wits, the reason that that fascist populist movement is gaining steam is because what the Obama administration appears to have done, and that is to slam trillions of dollars at the people, the very people who have destroyed the economy, Wall Street. I've been reading in some of the columnists who are also economists, like Paul Krugman, who seem to think that David Brooks, who is a conservative columnist for the New York Times, he's certainly not an economist, but I kind of like his writing because he's not a crazed right winger. He says that Geithner's plan has worked, and that what was happening a year ago in this country, where we were a year ago, perched, thanks to Bush and Cheney, on right on the lip of an economic collapse that would have made the so-called Great Depression look like a bad Saturday. And that Geithner and the policies that Obama used really pulled the country back from utter financial chaos. Now, this is coming from a conservative. I have heard people who are not conservatives say that Geithner's plan seems to be working, or the Obama plan seems to be working. That doesn't translate for people who can be jerked around by halfwits like Glenn Beck, or brain dead people like Sarah Palin. You know, the truth never works for those people. They populism is always based, and it's a shame, because when you say populist, one thinks of, I do anyway, someone who is interested in the people, but they're not. They're demagogues. They're, you know, Hitler was a populist. Huey Long was a populist. George Wallace was a populist. These movements usually die fairly quickly. Sometimes they, if they do take hold, millions of people will die for it. So, you know, this incarnation of populism in this country right now, this extreme right-wing populism, is populated by people who don't have a clue, have no understanding whatsoever of whether things are working or not working. Granted, they're in that same boat we're all in, of economic turmoil in this country. A lot of people who have lost their jobs have lost everything. And remember, into that kind of chaos steps totalitarians of the left, of the right. Doesn't make any difference. But they're still totalitarian. So that is the audience from which the right-wing demagogues in this country are drawing their biggest support. People who don't understand, don't have a clue, are faced with some immediate fear. They're all motivated by fear anyway, as we've talked about, in their own lives. So it's not a pretty picture, is it, Truth Seeker? Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Hope you're well.
Thank you. Hope you are, too.
Yeah, thanks. Just the most recent topic about the pension plans or pension funds and more or less being raided, and then just money disappears to the executives,
mm-hmm.
and then they look back and they say, well, look, the pension funds failed. Oh, see what good your labor union did you?
Yeah.
Just,
oh,
you know, it's just another two before they beat organized labor over the head with.
Absolutely. Hey, can you hold on a second?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold and we'll come back. I got to do a break here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by November 30th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It is 22 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Stephen is in El Paso, listening on Sirius. Hey, Stephen.
Hey there.
Forgot why you called.
Are you catching me?
No, go ahead. I'm listening to you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've been listening to you for about 2 years, and yeah. I'm so excited to talk to you. I really am.
Oh, well thanks.
You know, I want to be succinct, and I was watching a trite movie, The American President,
mm-hmm.
and Annette Bening had a great line in it. I don't know if you recall.
I don't.
She was talking about conservatives,
uh-huh.
and she said, they claim they love America, but they can't stand Americans.
But wait, say, you know, they claim, say it again.
They claim they love America, but they can't stand Americans.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. That's a line from the movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that. Believe it or not, I'm probably the only one left in America.
It's a cute movie.
Yeah.
And it leans more left than right, which mm-hmm. is cool.
Right.
But I think you are incredible. I used to tell my friends you would say things on the air that I wouldn't tell my closest friends. And I so respect you. As a matter of fact, tomorrow I will get on your site and I will become a member.
Well, that, all right, there we go. That would be great. I really appreciate that, Stephen. That's what is keeping the company or this program going, are those podcast subscriptions. I was telling somebody today, what I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the advertising is coming to this program, but it's still not to the point where we're self-sustaining. So subscribing to the podcast would be great. That guarantees or helps.
I love what you do. I'm not going to take up a lot of time, but and I think you've identified the problem with Americans. They're fundamentally stupid.
Yeah, and it's willful stupidity. We don't have to be this stupid. We really don't. We can take a few minutes out of each day to try to educate ourselves on the issues. We can get ourselves up to speed on contemporary history, on a little bit of political knowledge, so that we're not jerked around by demagogues like are so intent on jerking everybody around right now. So, yeah. All right. Well, Stephen, thank you, man. I'm glad you called in. Thanks for the support of the program.
I appreciate it.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. I think I cut off his last half sentence there. I apologize, Steve. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Another Steve. Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
This is Steve
before
night.
The break.
Oh, that's right.
No problem. Yeah. And what prompted my call at the beginning was just before the top of the hour, there was a caller talking about Congresswoman Lee.
Right. Barbara Lee, uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, other interesting news that, of course, went way unreported was Carl Levin, Senator, Chairman of the Armed Forces Committee, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And David Obey,
yeah,
the chairman of the Appropriations in the House, are talking about, okay, our Republican friends are so behind the troops. We're going to fund this. We're going to have a war tax.
Yeah.
And we're not going to see anybody going over there, no surges, nothing like that, until we know how we're going to pay for it.
And?
Calling them out.
But what's the response been from the neo-Nazis, i.e. the Republicans in this country? Are they already accusing the Democrats of trying to undercut the support for American troops in the battle, on the battlefield? That's their usual response. Have they started saying that yet, the Republicans?
This is just news I heard today.
Just today?
I haven't heard any, reactions to it. Like I say, it was kind of, fairly underreported, just, you know, these two prominent congressional folks were talking about if they're so concerned about how we're going to pay for this and that, okay, mm-hmm. How are we going to pay for this surge? We're going to have a war tax, or we're not going to see it happen.
Well, see, that's
an interesting move.
That's an example of coming up with a necessary, I almost said a good idea, a no war tax, no war is any good, a necessary idea to fund mass murder, killing, death, and destruction, which is what war is.
Exactly.
A better idea would be to get behind Barbara Lee's resolution and get our people the hell out of there. But if we're going to go, you know, if the Democrats are calling the Republicans bluff, you know what's going to happen. The Republicans, while this looks like it puts Republicans in a box from which there's no avenue of escape, that's what it looks like. We both know that that's not the case. We know that the Republicans will figure out some way to spin this as the Democrats not wanting to support the troops as they're out there fighting for peace, justice, freedom in the American way. The sons of bitches, I really hate them. It'll be curious to me, Steve, to see how the Republicans wind up spinning this. But spin it they will. Steve, I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in.
Seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, Barry writes in, Bush didn't ruin the economy. Reagan did. Reagan destroyed the union, started the process, with the help of spineless Democrats in Congress, of dismantling the firewall between banks and speculators. The beginning of media consolidation, Reagan. Bill Clinton didn't help much with NAFTA, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. His half-hearted attempts to make NAFTA less predatory were almost useless. And while the vote to repeal Glass-Steagall exceeded a presidential veto, the Clinton White House did little to stop it. Bush took advantage of the half-collapsed protection we had, and now we're defenseless against corporate power. As far as the economy goes, it's Reaganomics and the trickle-down voodoo, the Norquistian drowning government in a bathtub that they must now reverse. Barry. And of course, that reversal, I don't see how it could ever happen. I really don't. One of the reasons human beings have proliferated to the point that we have is our ability, our adaptability. You know, that's what evolution is all about, is adaptation, isn't it? Mutation and adaptation. And here we are. We will adapt. We're not going to change it. You think it's going to go back? Does anybody think that we're going to undo the destruction that has taken place in the 30 years? In the last 30 years, as Barry points out, of course, starting with Reagan. No. Can't put that genie back in the bottle. Corporate power is too extensive. Corporations are now equal to men and women where it concerns protections under the U.S. Constitution, even though they're nothing. Corporations are nothing. They're markings on pieces of paper filed in attorneys' offices, but it makes no difference. They are now equal in power to where it concerns constitutional rights. They far exceed the power of voters, citizens, the power of corporations. Give me a break. Come on. If a corporation comes into your neighborhood and decides to build a sewage system and you resist or refuse, you can be hit with what's called a slap suit, S-L-A-P-P, a suit that accuses you of interfering with the rights of the corporation to conduct business. I'm simplifying it, but that's essentially what it is. And you could be forced to defend yourself in court at the cost of millions of dollars in defense or hundreds of thousands of dollars in fees for your defense team. And if you did not have that, summary judgments could be issued against you to bankrupt you for the rest of your life and your children and your grandchildren, your great grandchildren. That genie's not going back in the Bible, back in the bottle. That's where we are now. So, reversing this process, somebody tell me, how do you do that? Or adapting and surviving. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't have any answers. Remember, I'm a liberal progressive, a former Democrat. I'm a liberal progressive. I have no answers that are applicable now. Unlike, say, Glenn Beck, who has all the answers, and Sarah Palin, and Michelle Bachmann, and Rush Limbaugh. These people have all the answers. And they're all based in hysteria, madness, fear, contempt, irrationality. But their answers, nonetheless, doesn't make any difference that they are nonsense. They're still answers. And when you have a population that is just incredibly, willfully ignorant, willing to be led like a bunch of sheep, that's all they want is answers. The answers don't have to be right. The answers don't have to be about survivability or adaptability. They have to be about demagoguery and nonsense. And the American public, any group, not just Americans, any group that is willfully ignorant, any societal group that's willfully ignorant, I don't care if they're Germans, Americans, Sinhalese, is that a group? Zimbabweans, it doesn't make any difference. Until finally a tipping point is reached and then bloody rebellion occurs. It's not even a revolution, it's just rebellion, that's all. The right-wingers are trying to push us into that. They want to see the president assassinated. Don't drop your microphone. They want to see the president assassinated, people like Beck. They want to see people killing each other in the streets. They want to see black against white. They want to see a race war. They want to see the murder of thousands of gay people. They want to see the destruction of this country. No, these genies can't be put back in the bottle. How are you going to undo the Communications Act or the Fairness Doctrine repeal? How are you going to undo Media Consolidation Act? The first one coming in the Reagan years, the second one coming in the Clinton years. How are you going to repeal that? You're not. Absolutely. So, reform? Nah. Adaptation. I don't think evolution is based on reforming or reformation. Evolution is based on adaptation, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I have no answers. Now, regarding the collapse of the economy, this is interesting. A CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll taken about 10 days ago found that, well, first of all, found that 82% of American adults contacted for the survey said the economy was poor. Okay, 82%. That's about right. There's about another 15% that are unconscious and 3% who are just happy as pigs in manure because they're making a fortune. And while Americans are looking for someone to blame, they appear to be shifting some of that burden from the Republicans to the Democrats. Aha. 38% still hold the Republicans to blame, but that's down from 53% in May. 27% say the Democrats are at fault. That's a 6% increase from May. Two-thirds of the respondents to the survey say they want the federal budget to be balanced. And I'll bet you of those two-thirds, of those 67%, they have no idea what that means and how it would apply to them, whether or not it is important, when it's important, what kind of fiscal chaos is operating in the United States when balancing the budget is the least of the country's worries. You follow up on those questions and you're going to get gibberish. Two-thirds of the respondents said they want the federal budget to be balanced. Did anyone follow up the question of why? Or how it got unbalanced? Or what does that mean, a balanced budget? What does that mean? Of course not. The poll was based on an interview, telephone interviews with 1,000 adults. So they're starting to shift some of the responsibility over to Barack Obama. Obama may be one of the reasons that certain sections of the economy are not moving forward. But what the hell is what is Barack Obama supposed to do? I'm sorry, I'm not defending him. I'm just asking a straight up question. What's he supposed to do? Two Bush administrations and a Clinton administration drove manufacturing and all sorts of jobs right out of this country. Okay? So when we talk about 17, 18, 19% effective numbers unemployed, what are those people supposed to do? And then we talk about another 5, 8, 9, 10% underemployed. What are people supposed to do? You know, take a look at Detroit, take a look at Flint, take a look at East St. Louis, take a look at Orange County, California. Look at manufacturing that used to exist in New York City, here in the South. I've already looked. The jobs are gone. So what is Barack Obama supposed to do? What are people on the Senate Banking Committee supposed to do? What are members of Congress supposed to do? What's supposed to be done? How is Barack Obama supposed to get those jobs back? Well, they're not coming back, ever. Now, there is a way to adapt, and that is to focus the recovery on... I mean, there is so much work that needs to be done in this country. Here we go again. So much work that needs to be done on the infrastructure of this country. Jobs that would pay real wages, run by real unionized companies. Real companies, not make work. There are all kinds of construction companies out there. All kinds of engineering firms. All kinds of companies that would design materials. Shipping companies. All sorts of things that could happen. Instead of throwing this money at these predatory sons of bitches on Wall Street and into this absolute sinkhole of spending on war armaments. But it's not going to happen. You know it as well as I do. So when my correspondent here says, well, it's, you know, this is what we have to work on, undoing the damage of 30 years of Republican control. Sure, that's exactly what we have to do. But the writer here knows that's not going to happen. Barry, he knows it's not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen. You know it's not going to happen. And it doesn't make any difference what we know. Corporate America knows it's not going to happen and is gleeful. There still is a very... a definite way, I think, to rescue this economy and the working class. And that is to start investing the trillions that are necessary to build the infrastructure of this country, make this country safe, secure, sound, workable. Come on. You know what I'm talking about. It's all there. All it takes is the kind of leadership that says, okay, we're going to do just that. Barack Obama is not providing yet that kind of leadership.
Storing every little file, make a promise and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite, make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove, think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free. And the nightmare will end.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Before the hour, we will be here tomorrow night, Wednesday night. We're off Thanksgiving and the day after. Just program note there. Troy is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, listening on XM. Hey, Troy.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am doing great. Thank you for asking. First off, let me just start off by saying I believe I'm a second-time caller. You're by far my favorite liberal talk show host. It's kind of hard to find one, especially when you actually, I don't quite live in Milwaukee. I live on the kind of the outskirts of the counties, but it's kind of hard to find a liberal talker.
That, oh, yeah.
Like, I think it was two-thirds of my county voted for McCain.
In Wisconsin. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. There is a county, believe it. But as far as, like, just leading ourselves out of the economy, I mean, I agree in the fact that we can't reform it. We need to adapt to it. And this is one thing I just wish that Barack would go out and do. Because even though he's at a 49% approval rating, mm-hmm. and that's still pretty high because you got to account for the people that are undecided on him. But I wish that he would just come out and just do a press conference and say, I would love everyone to buy American. I wish that he would just come out and do that because, honestly, it would help out our economy tenfold. And I know that I don't really have to explain this, but, I mean, I'm lucky enough to work in a company that makes an American-made product.
Mm-hmm.
And the beautiful part is, I mean, the economy actually is making our biggest year ever. I hate saying that to people, but we're having our biggest year ever so far. And I wish that people would just kind of wake up and just buy American. Because, I mean, think about if you go down to Tim's grocery store or something, and you go down there and you have to decide between a gallon of milk. And the one that's made over two cities over is 50 cents more. I mean, are people really going to miss that 50 cents?
Well, no, wait. I understand what you're saying, Troy, but there are a lot of products that people think they need in this country that simply aren't made here anymore.
Oh, true.
I mean, they're just not every single piece of electronic equipment that's in your house was not made here, whether it's your cell phone, the equipment to run XM radio that you're listening on. The stuff here in my studio, none of this stuff is made here anymore. I can go on and on. So while the idea of Buy American was great back in the 70s and 80s when it still made sense before manufacturing started to leave the country. But I mean, take toys, for example. Not that toys are a crushing necessity, but, you know, little children like toys. Where are Americans supposed to buy toys that are manufactured in this country?
Oh, I know. I'm saying just like.
Okay. Well, I get what you're saying, but the reality, Troy, is that, the manufacturing base of this country has really taken an enormous hit. So the things that, that Americans think they need now. You know, I'm talking about adaptation. We can adapt. We don't need 90% of the garbage, or 80%, 70% of the garbage that we think we need. But the stuff that we do need is no longer built here. I mean, we still build jetliners. We still build weapons. But is there an American company that builds televisions? Is there an American company that builds cell phones? Is there an American company? Yeah, you understand what I'm saying. There might be one or two buried somewhere that that do that. But it's that manufacturing base that made the country is more or less gone. You know, I'm afraid to say. Troy, got to move on. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Second time caller. We'll call again. Oh, no. Bill is in Sholo, Arizona. Sholo?
Yes, Sholo.
Welcome to the program, Bill.
Yeah, I'm calling in to find out just how far you would go to get rid of constitutional rights. And the only one that I'm concerned
Hold on a second, dummy. Hold on a second. What the hell is wrong with you? I'm talking about reestablishing constitutional rights. Are you out of your mind? I'm talking about putting the Constitution back where it belongs, like in war-making powers. Now, other than that, go away, because you're one of these crazy people that don't know what the hell I talk about. Even though I've been on the air for 20 years, you don't have a clue. And you told Kathy you wanted to find out how far I would go to take away your gun rights. Out of your goddamn mind? I have more guns than you've ever seen in your life, probably. So, you know, go away! Don't call my program, okay? I want to know how far you go to gut the Second Amendment. Oh, get serious. Go play with yourself or something, but don't call my program. Thank you. Prairie 2 sends in one last note here. Obama could use the coming crisis to roll out all the reforms we need, much as FDR was able to use the war to do things he couldn't do under the New Deal. If China can go from the mid-19th century steam locomotives and bicycles to having more middle class than we have people in less than 20 years, we can do it too. But I'm not giving up my canned goods. Okay. Yeah, and William writes, Obama's not going to do it. If he didn't know what the state of the economy was, then he should have never run on crap like hope and change and all the crap that really means not one damn thing other than to make some sort of history, which does not help anyone at all. William is not in a good mood tonight. Hey, take care, all right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.